This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing presents The Girl from Blind River, a novel by Gail Macy. This book is read by Brittany Presley. For Lyra. Chapter 1. Jamie shielded her eyes from a gust of wind blowing down the street and crossed the dirt yard in front of her uncle's trailer. A beagle, huddled against the night air in the back of a pickup, lifted its head and whined, but Jamie had nothing to feed it. Halfway up the porch steps, she heard the men inside, grabbed the mail that no one had bothered to collect for the last few days, and opened the door. The air inside was thick with smoke and the smell of beer and whiskey. The wind from outside lifted her uncle's ball cap, but he caught it and said,
"Shut that door before everything goes flying!"
He sat at the head of the kitchen table with five of his buddies, most of them still wearing blue work shirts from their shifts at the fertilizer plant south of town. Every Friday night, these men clocked out at 5 o'clock sharp and drove to her Uncle Loyal's place for a night of booze and poker. Years ago, she'd vowed never to become some good old boy's wife, sitting around a duplex waiting for her life to turn out like her own mother's had. Not when she was so good at poker, and not when other 19-year-olds were already playing the professional circuit. She had almost enough money to go pro, and pretty soon, her little brother would be big enough to handle himself alone with their uncle. Loyal tossed an empty pizza box on the floor and peeked at his hole cards, a bottle of Jack Daniels parked near his elbow. His best buddy, the county judge, sat to his left looking somewhat out of place in this group, with his neatly trimmed gray hair and red sweater. But his presence explained the Cadillac parked alongside the pickups outside. The sight of him made her bristle. Keating was the one who decided Jamie and Toby would live with their uncle while their mother spent those 8 years in prison, but he rarely came around to this side of town. Toby belched and wiped his mouth, avoiding the welt that ran the length of his cheekbone. His eyelids sloped just short of shut as he guzzled the dregs of a beer, crushed the can with his fist, and threw it toward the garbage. An empty shot glass was his card marker, and he was down to his last chip, which he tossed into the pot.
"I'm all in," he slurred.
A few beers and a little whiskey, and Toby was trashed enough to make a stupid bet. He was always the first player to go broke. Jamie searched the remaining pizza boxes until she found a piece of crust and chewed it while she watched the hand play out. Loyal called the boys' bet and huffed when Toby flipped over a 2-3.
"Whatever."
Toby tripped when he stood and the table rocked beneath his weight.
"Get him out of here, Jamie."
Loyal pushed the boy away. It seemed Toby might push back or take a swing at his uncle, but his face went slack with the effort to stay upright, and he lurched toward the dark hallway. Judge Keating grabbed one of his arms and helped Jamie steer him down the hall to the back room. Toby passed out face down on his cot, stinking of boyhood and pepperoni.
"I hear he can be a handful," Keating said.
She expected him to drop Toby on the cot and leave, but he just stood there. The room was too tight to have a grown man standing in it. Jamie turned on the lamp. Clothes and school books were scattered on the floor, and with their two cots, there wasn't much room to navigate. Keating hovered near the doorway, as though his being in this cramped room was natural. It wasn't, and she wished he'd leave. It was nobody's business how they lived. He looked around the room, and she could feel him judging every detail. The torn curtains, grimy plywood floor, the old thin mattresses sunk low in the middle.
"You two share this room?"
"Yeah." He knew how they lived, and she took it as a put-down. She picked up a pair of jeans and folded them, giving him a look that meant it was time for him to go. But Keating lingered. He pointed at the army recruitment poster hanging on the wall over Toby's bed, a uniformed soldier standing in front of a U.S. flag.
"I wanted to join the army when I was his age too," he said. "Guns and tanks. Boys like to dream about powerful things like that."
Jamie hated that poster. Those eyes always staring at her. But Toby was crazy for anything army. "He's going to a military camp for the summer."
"That private school upstate. You got money for that?"
It was a stupid question. They never had that kind of money. and this man standing in her room with his brand new L.L. Bean sweater knew it. The back of her neck got hot. They let two kids in for free last year.
Hardship case, huh? I got an old friend there. I could give him a call. I doubt he'll get in without a decent reference.
Keating stepped closer to her. She flinched before she realized he was just turning to leave.
It's only a phone call.
He hesitated at the dresser by the door and picked up a framed photograph of her and Toby with their mother from 10 years ago.
Huh,
he said.
He looks like his dad.
You knew him? It always shocked her to realize there were people in town who had known her father when he'd been dead half her life.
Of course. Knew both your parents in high school, decades ago. And you look a lot like your mother.
People who knew Phoebe Elders were always saying that, and it bothered Jamie. She saw herself as different and cringed at the notion that fate was handed down through family DNA. He touched a finger to the photo. The gesture was intimate and wrong for someone outside the family. Jamie grabbed at the frame, accidentally jabbing a fingernail into the back of his hand. He winced and dropped the frame. She stepped backward. Sorry. She picked the frame up off the floor. There was a crack in the glass, but she could fix it with a little tape. Keating loomed in the doorway, rubbing his hand.
It's nothing.
Toby, thick-headed with sleep, muttered something that sounded like,
"Nah, man,"
and rolled over. She held the photograph to her chest. Sometimes he talks in his sleep.
That camp might teach him a few things. Maybe keep him out of county detention. And from that last social services report, I'd say that's where he's headed.
Wind slammed across the open field out back and shook the trailer on its foundation. Jamie tried to think of a comeback but got caught up, worrying about that social services report. 6 months to his 18th birthday, and then they'd both be out of the system.
That camp works out. You can pay me back someday,
he said as he left the room. He disappeared down the hallway and Jamie shut the door, wishing it had a deadbolt. It didn't sit well, being indebted to anyone even in this small way. Debts and favors were exactly how Blind River kept its hold on people. She sat on her cot up against the wall, pulled her laptop out of her backpack and powered it up. Its rumble and grind suggested yet another failing battery. But she was able to get online and log into her bank account to check if the transfer from her latest winnings had been deposited. It hadn't. She logged into the poker site and checked the date of her withdrawal. 7 days had passed. A few days was normal, but she would need a new computer any moment now, and every day that the money didn't show up added to the worry that something had gone wrong. If the transfer didn't come by morning, she'd have to figure another way to get online, because every day she wasn't making money meant one more day in this town. The window pane over her bed rattled in the wind, and she pulled a blanket around her shoulders. Through the thin walls of the trailer, she heard the men in the outer room, their voices low and rhythmic as they grumbled and traded chips, complained about running low on beer, and convinced Loyal to crack open another bottle of whiskey. Footsteps thudded down the hallway, and Jamie thought about pushing her cot against the door. A minute later, the toilet flushed. The footsteps stopped outside her door, and she held her breath until her uncle called out something muffled and angry, and the footsteps trudged back up the hall. She flipped through the day's mail, stopping at an envelope with the official seal of the Family Services Department. The social worker had just visited them, and they weren't due to see her again for months. It still floored her how Ms. Jilkins could appear on any given day and demand an explanation for the smallest infraction. The envelope was addressed to her uncle, but she tore it open anyway. Just as she suspected, Jilkins had ordered another meeting to discuss Toby, this time with the high school principal on Monday afternoon. Jamie would have bet anything that Keating had been copied privately. She wanted to rip the letter in half. Instead, she folded it and stuck it inside her backpack until she could think it through. She closed her laptop, and yellow haze from the streetlight filled the room, shining on the army poster. Toby refused to take it down, claiming he could put up whatever he wanted on the one wall that belonged to him. She turned away from the poster. She hated that face constantly staring out from that wall. Outside, a truck backfired and she peeked through the curtain. Just a neighbor off to the graveyard shift at the plant. Toby snored loudly, but Jamie would be awake until the men left. She might at least get some practice. She went to the kitchen and poured a glass of milk. They were a bunch of hacks, no skill or finesse, but they were happy to let her deal and pushed their chairs around so she could have the spot closest to the center of the table. She didn't look at anyone, knowing they were eyeing her.
"How do we know there's nothing up her sleeve?"
Keating asked, only half-teasing. She waited for her uncle's cue.
"Pull your sleeves up, girl,"
Loyal said. She made a show of it, pushing the sleeves of her sweater up to her elbows and turning her palms up, then down. "All good?" They grumbled okay. She gathered the cards from the last hand, still face up. Jacks over aces. She flipped the aces over. The cards were old and worn and felt like feathers on her fingertips. Some were split along the sides, bent at the corners, or rolled so they wouldn't lie flat on the table. She gathered them quickly, shuffled them twice, and sent the whole cards flying.
"Wait a minute."
Lenny Childs, the youngest guy there, sat opposite Loyal at the other end of the table.
"What's up with these cards?"
She held the deck in her left hand and waited for Loyal. This was his game, his home, his rules, and Lenny was about to get schooled by a man with a quick temper.
"We're in the middle of a hand, Lenny."
Keating held out his palm as though they were in a courtroom. Lenny tossed one of his hole cards to the center of the table.
"That one's marked."
The card sat in the middle of the table, a tiny smear on its upper right corner. Jamie cut her eyes toward Loyal and saw what any of them could see if they looked. Red in the corner of his thumbnail. She squelched a smile. Loyal was lousy at cards, but decent at marking them. Chew a nail past the quick and smear a corner with blood. It was late, and these men were unpredictable when they were tanked on whiskey and beer. The mark was so obvious, she was surprised a fight hadn't already broken out. Loyal shrugged.
"We're all hardworking men. Everybody's got cuts."
Keating said,
"Let's be gentlemen here."
Lenny reached out and flipped the card over. The ace of hearts.
"But that blood on your thumb only made its way to the corner of this ace."
Loyal seemed twice the size of Lenny when he stood over the table.
"You got a problem? Say what you mean or get out."
"I'm just saying it's kind of funny. Maybe we should get our money back."
"This isn't my style,"
Keating said.
"I think this game is over."
He stood, picked up his coat, and slipped out the front door. The men were alert now. They pushed back from the table as Loyal walked around them, grabbed Lenny, and pushed him into the wall.
"You don't get your money back just by calling foul. We've been playing with these same cards all night.
Long enough for someone to mark them good."
"You're losing, and now you want your money back, so you're making up some shit?"
Jamie was trapped between the table and the kitchen counter. She crouched low in her chair, ready to slide under the table if they came to blows. This guy was an idiot, challenging her uncle in his own home in front of others. Lenny's head snapped backward before Jamie realized Loyal had decked him on the chin. His knees buckled briefly and his eyes rolled skyward. The wall shook from the thud of his body, but he caught himself from falling. Loyal rubbed his fingers.
"You just went half around with my fist and bought yourself a $50 story."
He went to the front door and threw it open.
"Get him out of here."
The men grabbed their jackets and headed out, chuckling at Lenny, but pulling him along behind them. Dogs barked and jumped up at the chain link fences. Doors slammed, engines roared. Loyal turned the lights out and sat on the couch, his shotgun across his lap. Jamie sat on the opposite end. She fingered a burn hole that had been there forever, waiting. It grew quiet again. An orange glow flared briefly in the dark as Loyal lit his last cigarette of the night. He was waiting, and because she knew that, she waited too. A diesel engine sounded from a block away. Headlights careened across the walls as a truck returned and rounded the corner. A single gunshot cracked the silence and Jamie dropped to the floor. There was a small explosion and a short burst of falling glass as the streetlight went out. Someone laughed maniacally in the distance. She covered her head, expecting a second shot, hoping it wouldn't come through the window. But the truck's engine faded into the wind. Her hands shook like they did when she got scared. She couldn't help it and tucked them between her legs.
"That asshole," Loyal said, glancing at her sideways.
"You calling it in?" she asked, knowing he wouldn't want to. He hated cops. And besides, outside the city limits of Blind River, they never came. Maybe for a dead body, but not for a random gunfire or a shot-out streetlight.
"No, I hated that fucking light anyway."
He headed down the short hallway to his room.
"Get some sleep. I gotta run for you in the morning,"
he said, and shut the door. Jamie spent the rest of the night caught between half-dreams and worry. The wind slammed against the trailer. The night shift came home and the day shift cranked their engines. In the morning, harsh light lifted across the field behind the trailer and lit their room. The fuzz on Toby's cheek glistened in it, and for a moment he seemed younger than his 17 years. The welt on his cheek was red, and a knuckle on his right hand was split. His mouth hinged open on a jaw loose with sleep, his breath reeking with booze. He was at that age when his bones were growing fast and elongating his face, and nothing much could wake him from a hangover on a Saturday morning. The phone in the outer room rang as Jamie lay unmoving beneath her blanket and waited for her uncle to answer it. The sulfur from his match drifted in under the door. He picked up the phone and mumbled hello. She listened.
"All right,"
he said, loud enough for her to hear him through the wall. He slammed the phone down and thudded up the hallway. Jamie swung her legs off the cot and pulled a sweater over her head. Loyal opened the door, pointed a knuckle at her, and ran a hand through his sandy gray hair. He'd slept in his clothes again, jeans and a tan flannel shirt, probably with the shotgun across his chest. Her laptop sat on the floor near the door. He pushed it toward her with his foot.
"Come out here."
She pulled on her jeans, threw a blanket over Toby, and picked up the laptop. It was colder in the kitchen. A draft seeped through the floorboards, cutting the smell of dirty ashtrays, stale beer, and mildewed carpet. Sunlight slanted hard at the window over the sink. "What's up?" she asked. Loyal shook another cigarette from a soft pack and lit it without taking his bleary eyes off her.
"A big game. Tonight. Keating's place. He wants you to deal. Pays $100.
She unplugged the toaster, plugged in the laptop, and cringed at the memory of last night. Keating encroaching on the space where she slept. "Who's going to be there?"
"No one you know."
Her dark hair fell over her forehead and she pushed it behind her ears. "You going?"
"Yeah."
He went off toward the bathroom, calling over his shoulder.
"Put some coffee on."
She pushed the power button on her laptop and listened to its whine and rumble. When the screen stayed black, she got the sinking feeling that it wasn't just the battery, that the laptop was shot. The remnants of last night's game were scattered across the table. Cigarette butts, empty bottles. She dropped the empties in a paper sack, rinsed the ashtrays, propped the back door open with the garbage can. Snowfall spotted the hill out back and bent the morning light at sharp angles. Wind swept through the trailer and cut the smell of last night's smoke. A dried up plant sat in the windowsill, begging for water. But when she turned the faucet on, the water was icy, and she guessed the pilot light had blown out again. She splashed some on her face anyway, cupped and drank it, grabbed a dish towel and rubbed her cheeks till she felt the blood come up. What she needed was a hot shower and some clean clothes, and time to think about whether or not it was smart to go anywhere near a man as powerful as Keating, and how profitable it might be if she did. From what she could tell, a friendship with him had worked out pretty good for her uncle. The toilet flushed and Loyal thudded up the hall. He sat down hard at the table, rubbing the back of his head.
"Shut that fucking door and bring me the cash bag."
She pulled the door closed and got him the bag and the bottle of aspirin they kept on the windowsill. The bottle was nearly empty. He leaned back in his chair and scratched his weak old scruff. But it was Saturday, and by supper that beard would be gone.
You get this one right, you hear? Take your cues from Keating and don't fuck it up.
He started stacking bills in denominations of 20s on down. Toby came into the kitchen, his hair flat from sleep, stains from last night's pizza on his t-shirt.
What's going on?
Nothing. I got a gig tonight is all. Jamie flinched at his breath and hoped he wasn't still drunk enough to start something. He looked at Loyal.
Why not me? I need someone with a poker face.
I got a poker face.
No, you don't, Loyal said. She's 1,000 times better than you. And besides, she's a girl.
So what?
Boy,
Loyal said, dropping his hands on the table impatiently.
You get caught and bones get broken.
She gets caught and they don't?
Jamie tore open a box of Pop-Tarts. I don't get caught.
Shut up,
Toby said. He poked at her computer's power button.
Piece of crap. Don't touch it.
She threw him a Pop-Tart and lowered her tone for Loyal. Can I get the money up front? What she really wanted was a little cash and a little downtime so she could figure out how to get her computer fixed.
You get paid after you do the job,
he said. But he pulled a couple of fives from one of the stacks and shoved them toward her.
That's a loan. You pay me back tonight.
It was more than she'd expected. But then he said,
wear some makeup or something. Give them something to stare at beside your hands.
She pushed the money into her pocket.
And don't show up looking like a dyke.
Loyal lit a cigarette and started adding up the stacks of bills. She turned to walk down the hall and he said,
and do something with your hair.
God damn. It made her want to scream. But she'd learned early on to sidestep his hangovers. Toby followed her to their room.
Who's going to be there?
He yanked off last night's t-shirt and threw it on the floor. Probably some rich guys from out of town. She knotted her hair into a ponytail and sorted through some clothes she kept in the box beneath her cot for another pair of jeans and her favorite black sweater. She jammed all of it into her backpack. How about you wash some clothes today? He rubbed his scalp.
No, my head hurts too bad.
Buy a new bottle of aspirin, okay? She handed him
$5. What I need is a beer.
Damn it, Toby. She got the letter from Jilkins out of her backpack and waved it in his face. Look at this. Jilkins called a meeting with the principal on Monday. Stop drinking until she's out of our hair.
Jilkins? What's she going to do?
He found a camo t-shirt beneath his bed and sniffed the armpits.
Send me off? To where?
She finds you drunk? She'll throw your ass in juvie or rehab, and you can kiss that army camp goodbye. Keating might be able to get you into that camp. Said he knows someone there. Maybe you could keep straight for a while, prove you're worth it.
Maybe.
He pulled the t-shirt over his head.
What do you mean, maybe?
Maybe you just want to get rid of me for the summer.
It was frustrating. One day he was all for it, the next all he wanted was to lie around all summer smoking blunts and playing video games. You told Jilkins you wanted to go.
So what? I tell her what she wants to hear.
She asked for Loyal to come to the meeting too. Jilkins never fazed him like she did Jamie. They'd been 9 and 10 years old when their mother was sentenced to prison, and Jilkins was assigned to their case as a social worker. When she showed up the first time, Jamie had thought the woman intended to take them to county juvenile housing, a low building with barred windows surrounded by a barbed wire fence out on the county highway, where boys and girls were separated no matter if they were family. But Jilkins had just inspected the trailer, the rooms, the kitchen, and the small bathroom, her nose turned up in an air of loathing, and explained that she knew a married couple with a two-story house who were looking for a boy and girl to adopt. She just needed time to work out the details. But a month later, Keating granted their uncle court-supervised guardianship, and the married couple, with the big house, was never mentioned again. Jilkins came around every few months to inspect the trailer and write her reports, but nothing much had changed over the years. Until recently, when Toby had discovered he could get pretty much anything he wanted with his fists, Jilkins had started coming around more often then. Toby shifted his eyes toward the door.
Did you tell him?
No, he didn't see the letter. I'll go and say he sent me instead.
Then what's the big deal?
He picked at something crusty on his sleeve. Jamie grabbed his shirt and pulled his face close to hers.
I'm asking you to keep it together for a few days. Can you just do that? And stay away from Loyal until he feels better.
He pushed her hand away.
I hate him. He orders me around. Last week, he made me wax his new truck. The whole damn thing. It took all afternoon.
He takes care of you, though, doesn't he? Bought you boots last month?
Only because my old ones finally fell apart. He just keeps us fed and clothed to keep the state out of his hair. I'm working my own deal.
He pulled a sheet of paper from under his pillow and unfolded it.
Check it out.
She took it from him. He'd drawn a grid and filled in the top and side with numbers. It looked just like the ones Loyal ran for NBA and NFL games. He'd already sold most of the squares.
When did you start this? Last week. It's for the Trojans game tomorrow night. Made enough to buy Mom something nice for her birthday.
Their mom, Phoebe, had been out of prison for almost a year now. When her sentence was finished, the parole board had allowed her to return to Blind River because her children were there. That, and because the women's group at the Methodist Church had set her up with a job at the diner on Main and some garage apartment off a rat-infested alley behind the town's strip of storefronts. Phoebe had never lost visitation rights, but was barely able to make ends meet. So it had been decided that the kids would stay with Loyal. Toby often went to the diner for supper, and sometimes Jamie followed him there and watched the two of them through the plate glass windows. They always laughed, and it amazed her. How could they have anything to laugh about? Once, Jamie went inside and sat at the counter and let the woman serve her a bowl of soup and a cup of coffee. But they'd barely been able to look each other in the eye. Prison had left her mother smaller somehow, even though she seemed heavier and her skin had turned gray, as though the colorless concrete walls of the institution had left a permanent stain.
I sold most of it, $2 a pop.
Then give me back that $5. She fastened the straps of her backpack.
And keep that out of school, okay? They'll bust you hard for that shit.
Doubt it.
He studied the $5 bill.
Coach bought 10 boxes. You're not the only one who's got it going on, you know?
Never said I was. He flattened the bill against the window pane and squinted at it.
Do you think I could copy this on the library's printer?
Don't be stupid. It would cost more than $5 in ink alone. She grabbed the bill from him. He picked up a length of rope. It seemed as if he learned a new knot every week. She put her jacket on and watched as he slipped a hangman's knot over his head and pretended to choke. He was such a child sometimes. You better put that back on Loyal's truck.
He doesn't even know it's missing.
He goes to tie something down and he'll know it's gone. And clean up around here, will you? Put your stuff under the bed or something. She swung her backpack over her shoulder, the weight of it knocking her into the wall. She balanced and straightened.
Where are you going?
The computer store. And then over to Angel's house for a shower. I'm gonna take her some stuff, and I haven't seen the baby for a month.
Does Billy have weed?
Toby asked. I doubt it. Angel laid down the law about that shit. She pushed through the narrow hallway to the front room. He picked up his boots and hopped down the hall behind her, yanking them on.
I'm coming with you.
Loyal sat on the front porch steps, finishing last night's bottle of whiskey. She squeezed past him and his dank breath, sucked the clean air into her lungs. He tossed a small brown paper package at her. She caught it against her chest.
I sat it up to the dollar. Take it straight to Jack.
It was sealed with tape and heavy. She tested its weight in her hand and figured it had to be twice as much as the one from last week.
He calls me if that seal's broke.
I know the routine. She stuffed the package into her pocket and walked into the yard. He came off the steps quicker than she thought he was capable of and caught her by the arm.
Cut the attitude, girl, and don't be late tonight.
She steadied her eyes on his chest, aware that Toby was standing in the doorway, that he'd fly out the door at Loyal if he raised his hand, and then she'd be stuck here the rest of the day keeping them from killing each other. But the moment smoothed out when Loyal loosened his grip and cupped her chin, almost affectionately.
Be there by 8,
he said, and turned her toward the road. He wheeled back to Toby.
You're not going anywhere until you change the oil on the Ford.
Across the street in a vacant lot, The high branches of a winter bare sycamore scratched at the pale sky. In the distance, a semi worked its way up the highway, the whine of its engine snaking its way through the pines, reminding her of the time when she was 12 and she'd convinced Toby to get on a Greyhound bus with her and run off to Florida. A place she'd heard was always warm, and where you could eat oranges right off the trees. She'd never known such freedom as she felt when riding in those high-backed seats with Toby curled up next to her sleeping with his head on her shoulder. But at midnight, they hit a roadblock of red and blue flashing lights, bouncing against the bus window. They hadn't even made it to the state line. A state trooper locked them in the back of the cruiser, and she'd stared at the metal security mesh bolted across the back of the front seat, unable to breathe and enduring knife-like spasms in her lungs. Toby peed his pants. They'd crawled to the floorboard and huddled there, spines back to back, the entire ride home. She could walk to the highway right now, stick out her thumb and catch a ride. She had enough of Loyal's money in her pocket right now to head out on her own. Toby was almost old enough to take care of himself. Almost, but not quite. So she aimed her boots down the narrow blacktop that led to town and bent her body into the wind. Chapter 2. The road to town was lined with jagged pines. Jamie tucked her hair inside her skullcap, buttoned her jacket against the cold gray dawn, and walked with her head forward, hands deep in her pockets. Her phone buzzed from inside her backpack, and she ignored it in exchange for a few minutes to think. The town of Blind River was a 20-minute walk down a narrow two-lane. Weeds, bent to the ground by morning frost, sloped along the embankment to black ditches, thick with mud and smelling of the runoff from the fertilizer plant upstream. Ice-slicked grass crunched under her boots, and she was careful to keep at least 1 foot on the blacktop. The down jacket and backpack gave some bulk to her figure, so that anyone coming around the curve could see her and swerve. Still, she kept close to the shoulder until the road flattened on a bend where the town's only 7-Eleven had been built. The low building, its windows plastered with neon beer signs and lottery posters, sat square in the middle of a gravel parking lot, just off the road in a notched-out patch of woods. Between the ads, Jamie could see the vacant checkout counter, and she walked toward the smell of burning weed at the back of the store. Myers had the door propped open with the mop bucket. He leaned against the jamb, staring at a folded newspaper, the crossword puzzle, she guessed, by the pencil behind his ear and the confusion on his face. She had worked for him 3 months in the kind of dead-end job designed to keep people from ever improving their lives. After taxes, she got $187.60 a week for opening the store and keeping the coffee pots full and the breakfast burritos hot, unless she got docked for forgetting to mop the floors after the early rush. Myers had always found a reason to dock her paycheck, and when she'd shown up late 3 shifts in a row, he'd fired her. The hard-working people of this town needed their daily packs of smokes and giant styrofoam cups of coffee at 6 in the morning, not 7. Her uncle kept a more fluid schedule. On days like today, when he was too hungover to get out of the house, he paid her $50 to collect money from a few of his gambling machines scattered around town. At the sound of a car coming off the highway, Myers pinched the ember off the blunt, crushed it under a shoe, and went inside. Jamie slipped into the storage room through the back door and grabbed what she thought Angel might need. A box of tampons, some cheese, and a package of salami, and crammed it all into her backpack. In the front of the store, the cash register slammed shut and the chimes over the door clanged. She had about 5 seconds before Myers would shuffle back to the storage room. She grabbed a quart of milk, headed out the back door, and kicked the mop bucket over. He threw the door open and yelled, "God damn it!" But she'd already made it up the path that cut through the woods. She crested the hill, knowing he'd never leave the store long enough to chase her down, and chances were he hadn't seen enough of her backside to make an official accusation. She stopped behind a tree to catch her breath. She heard the bucket bang against the wall and the back door slam shut. By the time she got to the other side of the woods, the sun was high and ghostly behind frigid white clouds. The path ended at the alley between the computer store and the old strip mall turned Satellite Community College. She walked around to the front of the store and went to the help desk. A few students were ahead of her. She took a number and bought a Coke from the vending machine. A long-haired petite girl sat reading against the wall in a corner by the window. college. She'd bombed her classes worse than anything in her life. Now, just seeing a textbook made her stomach turn. Never able to keep up, she'd studied late every night, read the assigned chapters twice, gone to sleep at 3 in the morning feeling like a loser because the words didn't make sense. Woken up feeling that same way. Her advisor hinted at a transfer to the tech program. Maybe she'd be better at food service or welding. Then her grades came in. She'd flunked out in 1 semester. When Loyal had found out, he'd screamed at her until she agreed to sign up and try again in the winter. Like he gave a damn about college. It didn't make sense. He'd never cared about her grades or what subjects she took. The college put her on probation and reinstated the grant that covered tuition and books for kids living below the poverty level. But it didn't matter. After 3 weeks, she was so far behind she stopped going to class. The only thing that made her feel better about that was not having to face midterms. That had been 2 months ago. The only person who knew was her uncle's business partner, Jack Del Mar, the guy who ran the check-cashing store on Main Street. He'd said not to worry about college, that he'd done the same thing 20 years earlier and it hadn't hurt him at all. He let her hang out in his back office, and she'd kept it from Loyal since, left the house at the same time each morning and came home late each night. Wasn't his business anyway. After a week of pretending to be at school and poking around on the internet, she'd found an online poker site. Right away, she saw she was better than most players. And it was all legit. No sleight of hand, no marked cards. Every time she cashed, it was due to knowing the odds, playing her position on the board, and calculating the perfect timing of a bluff. She was good even without cheating, and the rising balance on her account proved it. A $1 tournament could pay $100 if enough players signed up. After 1 month, she was winning a little money nearly every day, putting her average at about 5%. She knew from the chat rooms that the best players averaged 10%. This is the future, she thought. And I'm in on the ground floor. Every day, her brain expanded. She could see a hand developing and knew immediately how much to bet or when to fold. If she'd had a faster laptop, she'd have been able to play 4 or 5 tournaments at once and really rake it in. She was getting close. Last week, she'd won her first $20 tournament, and it had paid big, almost $6,000. If her transfer had come through last night, she'd be able to buy the new laptop today. She sipped the Coke and tried to power up her laptop. She got nothing but a blank screen. The girl reading by the window closed her book and stretched her arms over her head with swan-like grace. Jamie figured the girl had understood every single word of that book, and instantly hated everything about her. The highlights in her hair, the pink fingernail polish, the clearly above-average reading comprehension. When the tech desk called her number, the news was as she'd expected. The battery was ruined, and that wasn't all. Her computer was so outdated the batteries had been discontinued. She'd hoped to give it to Toby, but he'd been such a tool lately, and he'd probably just use it to watch porn anyway. The model she needed was $2,600. It was a lot, but she needed it if she was going to get serious. She'd heard of players tucked up in their parents' attic, playing 3 or 4 days in a row, making tens of thousands. It would pay for itself in a week, probably less, and then she'd work on saving enough to get to Florida. She'd never waited more than 5 days for a transfer, so it would definitely come through today. It probably already had. She gave the techie guy a thumbs up and he unboxed the new laptop. It took him an hour to get everything off her old hard drive and loaded onto the new laptop. While she waited, she bought another Coke and practiced with a deck of cards. When she flipped over a queen, she remembered what her mother had used to say whenever the Queen of Spades appeared. The luck of the odds. She'd said it so often that Jamie had begun to imagine a little family with round, sad faces like queens and jacks. The odds family. A lucky family. A boy and girl that she would draw in the margins of her homework, because homework was hard, but drawing this family pulled her into a quiet space inside her head. She drew them until she got in trouble, and the teacher started subtracting points from her grade. But that didn't stop her. She drew them in study hall, and later in detention, and only stopped when a guidance counselor insisted that the reason she drew the little people was because there were problems at home she needed to talk about. Sitting in the cafe now, she tried to stick an ace from the bottom of the deck, but her concentration was off and her fingers were clumsy. The cards didn't distract her from what she'd have to do if the transfer hadn't come through. She touched the jacket pocket holding her uncle's envelope, guessing at the amount of cash the South Route usually brought in. 5 or 6,000 at least. The techie guy brought the laptop to the checkout line, where a tall, good-looking dude ran the cash register. The bill was over $2,900 with tax, so she waived the extra fee for a service contract. She'd use her debit card and hope the balance would get covered by the little credit attached to the account. If that didn't work, she'd have to go with the backup plan. She swiped her card. It failed.
That happens, the good-looking dude said.
Huh, she said. She tapped her card on the counter and thought it through one more time, even though she'd already decided. There was a window here, probably a good 48 hours before Loyal would know something was off with the deposit. Besides, Loyal hadn't gotten where he was today without taking chances, skirting the rules, floating money from one account to another. If she never took a chance, she'd never get out of Blind River. What were her choices anyway? Every day she wasn't playing online, she was losing money. According to what she'd learned in the poker chat room, transfers could take up to 10 days, though she'd never had to wait that long. Chances were it would come through this afternoon, and she'd skate through unnoticed. She pulled out the envelope, shook her head at what she was about to do, and slit the tape with her fingernail. It's okay, she said. I have cash. Chapter 3. A band of clouds rolled in from the west as Jamie headed up Main Street. She passed the hospital and police station and the parking lot at the courthouse. By the time she got through town to Angel's neighborhood, the cold had seeped through her jacket and she was shivering. The sky squatted low over the ramshackle bungalows, their roof gutters bulging with soggy leaves and blackened icicles. Jamie turned the corner at Sykes Avenue and saw Billy Wages, red-nosed and bubbled in a stadium jacket, sitting in a lawn chair in the yard of their rental unit, feet propped on a cooler, bobbing his head to music from a boombox.
Jamie, he hollered and spread his arms wide. Not for a hug. They didn't hug.
It was a two-handed wave that indicated Billy was already deep into his Saturday morning six-pack of Molsons. What are you doing out here? She asked. It's fucking cold.
I'm just minding my own business. Chilling in my fucking yard, man.
He waved his hand at his tiny kingdom of dead winter grass.
Whatever makes you happy, Jamie said. And I am happy, he said, staring into space and drawing out his words. Always happy to see my wife's best friend come nosing around my house.
She thought about making a peace offering of the salami, but that was Angel's favorite food. Where is she?
Inside. Says the music's too loud for the baby. I say whatever.
He reached down and cranked the volume louder. The bass pulsed and he nodded with the rhythm. This was what people did in Blind River for entertainment. Kids snuck off to the woods to get high. And then when they became adults, they sat in their yards in the snow and ice and drank beer. She stepped around him and the extension cord snaking off the front porch. Inside, the place smelled of used burp pads and soiled diapers. Angel paced at the window with Tucker asleep on her shoulder. Her bleached out hair hung in her face and her eyes were ringed with the dark bags of a sleep-deprived mom. A blue vein ran just beneath the pale skin of her jaw. If I put him down, he wakes up and bawls. Jamie dropped her things and said, give him to me. The baby's eyes flicked open briefly as she took him. She cupped his head and held him upright against her chest.
It's going to be a long day if he doesn't slow down, Angel said, looking out the window toward the front yard. He doesn't help much, especially in the middle of the night.
He's a big baby, Jamie said. You're telling me. Angel peered through the blinds at Billy. I mean, Tucker. He seems big for 3 months. She nodded toward her backpack. There's some stuff in there for you.
Angel grabbed it and flopped on the couch, fishing through it and tossing the packages on the coffee table.
She laughed.
Nice assortment. Just some essentials.
Small, high-priced items, overpriced tampons, very efficient. The baby was alert and active now, holding his head up and looking around the room. Jamie liked the weight of him in her arms, like a warm, overfed cat.
What's up? Shouldn't you be studying or something?
I need a shower and our water heater's out again. Jamie sat down in the rocker and pushed. The baby kicked his feet as if to go faster.
How's school?
Angel stretched out and pushed a pillow under her head. Reflexively, Jamie checked Angel's face for sarcasm, but she knew better. Angel wasn't mean when it came to Jamie.
It's not the same as high school. Harder than I expected.
So you cut back, take some easier classes.
Nope, I'm out.
Just like that?
Exactly like that. You don't flunk out 2 semesters in a row and get to stay in.
Huh. She pushed Jamie with her foot.
I always thought you were the smart one.
Doesn't look that way. Jamie bent her head toward the baby's head, remembering hearing something about pheromones that caused adults to respond positively to a newborn. This one smelled like rotten milk.
There's something more, isn't there?
Angel narrowed her eyes.
What?
Jamie hesitated, then smiled.
I took money from Loyal.
So what?
He doesn't know. I'm waiting on a transfer. I needed a loan. So I took it from this morning's deposit.
What the fuck? Jamie's gone rogue. This is the best part of my whole week.
Shut up. I needed a new laptop.
It's in that bag.
Seriously, you just took his money?
I borrowed it.
Just until my transfer comes through.
He'll never know.
That's awesome. But you got balls to fool with that man's bankroll.
I know. It was a little unnerving to say it out loud.
Doesn't he have partners? It's not all his money, is it?
Jamie cut her eyes at the window. She hadn't thought that part through.
Yeah, he has partners.
That judge, right?
Listen, you can't tell anyone, especially Billy.
Okay, but those aren't the kind of guys you want to fuck with. They don't play by anybody else's rules. Cops are in their back pocket.
Jamie rubbed her eyes, wishing she'd gotten better sleep.
It doesn't matter. I'm making my own money now. I'll pay it back before they find out.
What? How? With that online shit?
Yeah, she said, though she didn't quite believe it herself.
Maybe enough to hit the road.
You're making that much?
Damn. If you're so hot to get out of town, my aunt needs someone to house sit at her condo in Fort Lauderdale. She's asking around, but you'd have to deal with her pack of chihuahuas.
Angel stuffed a pillow under her knees and lit a joint.
When?
Next month? But you can't fuck around with it. Her sitter just bailed and she's going to Italy with some travel group. Let me know soon, but be careful what you wish for.
She waved smoke from her face and pointed toward the front yard.
All I ever thought I wanted was to marry that guy, and look how that turned out.
She said this inside a yawn and laid her arm over her eyes.
The bass from the boombox came through the walls, low and dull, and the baby fell back asleep in Jamie's arms.
She slipped him onto the couch beside Angel, threw a blanket over them both, and went to the bathroom to start the hot water.
While the tub filled, she smoked the rest of Angel's joint, breathing deeply of the mix of smoke and steam. She soaked her neck and shoulders, scrubbed her nails and feet, wondered how long it had been since she'd felt this warm or this clean. But thinking about that new computer and playing 5, maybe 6 games at once made her antsy. She got out of the tub as soon as the water cooled. She wiped a circle in the mirror, checked her face, thought about some eyeliner, but changed her mind. It was always the eyes that caught her off guard. Her mother's eyes, and made her turn from her own reflection. Someone banged on the bathroom door and Jamie threw on a sweater and her clean jeans. She opened the door to Billy, glaring at her. She smelled his beer breath and squeezed by him in the doorway. In the kitchen, Angel and the baby were up. Tucker was in his bouncy lounger on top of the table.
You hanging out here today?
Angel asked, while she tried to get the baby to eat some mashed orange food. Not much of it got past his fists. Jamie sat down and towel dried her hair.
Just for a little while.
I'm dealing a game at Judge Keating's house tonight.
What's that like? A bunch of guys getting plastered?
Be careful. You got mace in your pack?
Always.
Jamie pulled on her socks. You know what? You should go to that school where you get certified to deal in a casino. Those babes make real coin. That's a career. Jamie combed through a tangle while she powered up the new laptop. It didn't make a pained sound like the old one, just a nice, blingy noise when it was ready to use. Forget dealing. I want the big time. You think you can make that much online? Staring at a computer for hours? Yeah. Online is all legit. None of these fools marking cards and bending corners. And when I get big enough bankroll, I'm gonna hit the professional poker circuit in South Florida. But computer work? How much fun is that? You should go to Mimowa. They always need pretty young dealers. She'd heard the stories about Mimowa from some guys at school. Almost every weekend, a bunch of them drove up to Mimowa. Stole their parents' debit cards, boozed it up, went a little crazy. Almost always, some fool lucked out and won a little bit of money. It sounded like fun, but she'd never gone. Never had enough money to blow. And then she'd learned about online poker. It isn't like computer work. It's a blast. It can't be as much fun as a casino. And you, Jamie Elders, are lucky. If I had any cash, I'd float you to play at one of those high-stakes tables. Ever think about that? Might be a fun night for me and Jack. Angel's eyes widened. Jack? At the check store? Jack, your uncle's business partner? The guy with the floppy brown hair and dreamy eyes. Jack, who is married and twice your age? See how casually you slip that in. How long's that been going on? A month or so. Jamie tied her hair up. You could come too. We could party. Party at Mimowa. I got a kid, Jamie. I stay home to get drunk. Jeez, when was the last time you got out? It's not like you're chained here. Where's the old Angel, the one that crowds parted for? There was never a boy in town willing to mix it up with Crazy A. Angel made like a prize fighter and they both laughed, remembering the time in third grade when she'd pounded a boy on the playground until blood ran out of his nose, all on account of the boy sticking his hand down her pants. By high school, the story had grown to mythic status. One of the boy's eyes had popped loose during the fight. His right ear had been cut off, and both were reattached in emergency surgery. Since then, nobody had messed with Crazy A, and the badass rep had saved them both a few times. Times change, Angel said. She wiped the muck off the baby's face and put the spoon down. So, you and Jack, huh? Does his wife know? I don't know what she knows. Jamie punched a button on the laptop and got nothing. What's up with your Wi-Fi? It's out. But about Jack, what did he tell you? He said they're through. Doesn't matter anyway, it's just a thing. Come on, Jamie. Husbands always say their marriage is over when they have the chance to bang someone else. Billy probably says that to chicks all the time. Billy came out of the bathroom red-eyed and wobbly and dropped into a kitchen chair. Smells good in here. He pulled his sweatshirt up over his belly and scratched. The prize catch of the Blind River varsity football team. Angel's first choice over every other guy in town. Billy, the guy you didn't want to cross. The guy who never forgot an insult. The guy who'd 5 years after middle school found his seventh grade science teacher's house and poured a jug of bleach into his gas can for having failed him. Angel handed the spoon to Billy. Feed him and I'll make you some coffee. Deal, he said, and zoomed the spoon around making plane noises while Tucker batted away his hand. Billy licked the spoon. Jesus, that's disgusting. Why do you feed him that shit? Babies need nutrition, Jamie said. She packed up the laptop. Billy rolled his eyes at her. Thanks, Einstein. Why are you even here? He asked, only half playful. Don't you have class or something? I'm just visiting, man. Jamie spread her hands across the table face up, mimicking him. He didn't laugh, but shook out a Winston and stuck it in his mouth. No, seriously. The water heater at Loyal's was out. I might have used all yours. Her phone buzzed inside her backpack. You should get that, Angel said. It keeps going off. She dug it out of the side pocket. Jack had called twice and texted 5 times wanting to know where the hell she was. Damn, I gotta go, she said, and tied up her boots. Chapter 4. When Jamie walked through the front door of the check cashing store, Jack ignored her until he finished counting out cash for a customer. She stood shivering in the corner until they left. Once the store was clear, he shut the cash register and put up the back and five sign. Then he pulled her into a small office in the back.
I've been calling you for an hour. My cash drawer is almost empty. I was going to have to send folks to the bank, and you know that's not how I make money.
She knew that. Cashing payday checks with a 20% fee and laundering her uncle's money for a neat 10% was how Jack Del Mar made money. His laptop sat opened up on his desk, glowing in the dark room. She flipped on the overhead light. Sorry, she said, and tossed her backpack on the ratty futon. I ran an errand and then stopped by Angel's. I'm only an hour late.
You're 2 hours late. But that's not the real problem. You haven't been online today, have you?
No, my computer died. What's going on? He pointed to his laptop.
You won't believe it.
She sat down and tried to understand the logo on the screen. It was an official-looking government seal, and that never meant anything good. What is that? He leaned over her shoulder and pointed.
Look at the URL. That was PokerStars, but it's been shut down.
No. That can't be right. She refreshed the screen, opened a new window, typed in another address, and watched as the same seal appeared. PokerStars, Megachips. The same government seal was displayed on every site. Her hands were still freezing, but sweat pricked at the back of her neck.
What the hell? I have $6,000 in there.
Had. You had $6,000 in there. They shut the whole thing down.
Oh, fuck no.
Her eyes started jumping around the screen.
What? They can't do that.
They're the U.S. Justice Department, Jamie. They can do anything they want. They can crawl through that laptop and take your entire checking account if they want to.
But it's my money. I want it.
She pulled off her stocking cap.
Why didn't you transfer it? You should know better than to leave that much money out there.
Don't talk to me like I'm a child. I transferred it the same day I won it over a week ago. I've been waiting for it to come through.
Bastards. Those sites probably knew this was coming down and stopped paying out.
Shit!
She dropped her head to the desk.
He's going to kill me.
Who?
She pulled Loyal's packet out of her pocket and tossed it on the desk. He picked it up and peeled back the broken seal.
Oh, man, are you kidding me?
She had refolded the envelope neatly, but the tape was slit and the folds didn't match the size of the bundle inside. It was obvious that some of the money was gone.
10% of that was mine.
His voice seemed distant. She closed her eyes. Her mind raced with panicky half-thoughts. The back of her uncle's hand. $3,000. 8 hours. She opened her eyes again.
What am I going to do?
He thumbed through the bills.
You better get back, and you better be quick about it. There's 2,000 here.
Her hands trembled as she dug out the receipt for the computer and read the fine print.
God damn! Electronic sales are non-refundable.
I can't believe you.
He'll kill me if he finds out.
He won't kill you,
he said unconvincingly.
It depends on how Keating takes it. They split the rest. You know that, right? And they pay rent on all the sites in the middle of the month.
Fuck!
She hadn't figured that in. She logged into her bank account, fumbling with the password.
Maybe the transfer came through before they shut it down.
He dropped to the futon and shook a cigarette from his pack.
It was all over the news. They shut it down at midnight last night. I checked.
She got the account called up and saw she was overdrawn.
Can you cover it for me?
She immediately regretted asking and added,
I mean, I can work it off.
I know a guy who'd pay a couple hundred for a video of a naked girl doing it.
He could be such an ass.
Really? I'm fucked and